Welcome to CompTIA's Shark Bites podcast with Alan Shark, Executive Director at the Public Technology Institute.
Hi there, everyone. This is Alan Shark, and welcome to another episode of Shark Bites, brought to you by CompTIA's Public Technology Institute. I'm Alan Shark, and I'm the Executive Director. And we're here today with a kind of a unique guest, although I'd like to think all our guests are unique. But this one kind of is in the clouds, but in a different way than you might think. So welcome, Bob. I'll introduce you more formally.
Great.
So Bob Dahlstrom is the CEO of AppleX, who are very much into aerial robotic systems. So we're going to talk about drones today. And I'd like to first welcome you formally and say thank you for being on the program. And I always like to start with words about yourself in terms of how you got to where you are today. You know, were you one of these folks who said, I want to be a fireman, policeman, an engineer, doctor? I mean, what led you to technology? And just tell us about your journey to the CEO of your company now.
Well, sure. And thank you, Alan. I appreciate you inviting me on the show today. So I think it started with my father owning a hardware store. And back in the day, you know, I was like 13 when I started working there. And you would actually go to every customer that walked through the door and assist them. So somebody needed a light switch. You'd show them where the electrical section was and you'd talk to them and you'd learn about electricity. They'd learn about some ideas you maybe had for how you could help them solve their problems. So plumbing, electrical, all these different mechanical systems. And it was very exciting to, you know, always have that new knowledge and that new learning going on and that satisfaction of helping people. And so that sort of continued on through my career in different ways. And like most of us, we've taken circuitous routes to get to where we are today. So, you know, I've been everything from a butcher to a integrated circuit manufacturer working in a clean room. I started my first company after working for the Florida legislature. I became a college professor, and I started a technology company with internet software, and that's when I became aware of CompTIA. So this was back in 1998 is when it was started, but I think it was probably around 2004, 2005, I became a member of CompTIA. That company finally, after about 15 years or so, was an overnight success. One of the other jobs I had working my way through college was painting houses. So here it is, you know, my one company is pretty successful. I'm up there on a ladder on top of scaffolding because it's a two-story house that you park underneath, and I'm painting, and I quickly realize I'm not in college anymore. And there's got to be a better way. And so I thought drones, but then I'm like, well, no, you know, paint is very heavy. Batteries are heavy. You just wouldn't be able to do it. But I knew from my background from my software company that with software, I could keep the drone the right distance from the wall to apply coating. And I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be hard to do. And I looked down at the ground where the compressor is, and I had the eureka moment all inventors have, right? Keep the power on the ground, the paint on the ground, the compressor on the ground, have an umbilical cord or a tether come up to the drone, and with software, create the ability to spray paint a structure with the drone. So I came back and built a proof of concept that actually worked much better than I thought, because one of the concerns obviously would be you know, the propellers spinning the air, causing prop wash and causing the drone to not either get on the surface or causing paint to get all over the drone. So engineered around that, and then when it went forward and started the company. And so I've been, unlike most drone companies that are in the cloud, you talked about the cloud earlier, this is a different type of cloud, not the technology cloud, although we're there too, because drones are flying computers. And if you're flying computers, you're data gathering machines. So we have a large cloud component to this as well, but our drones are somewhat counterintuitive. They're not flying far, they're not flying fast, they're not, you know, a camera in the sky. These are more or less very large, industrial, slow-moving aircraft in close proximity to structures doing work.
That is fascinating. I was wondering how you got to what I'm going to ask you next about how do you spray and coat physical objects. But before we get to that, I think it's important to kind of let everyone know that that Bob is part of the CompTIA family, as he mentioned, and actually is very active with CompTIA's Drone Advisory Council. And that's where we first met. And because we are part of CompTIA, this is just a great opportunity to kind of cross-pollinize and understand each other's environment. And we've had some very good conversations about potential applications for local governments. So now you have this umbilical cord. You have perfected a drone that doesn't get in its own way of the paint wash, which probably was no easy task. I could see window cleaning too for my house. I wouldn't mind having that for window cleaning in my four-story townhouse. So as you apply it, what are the main targets that you look for in terms of opportunity?
Well, again, just like you have an idea for window washing, once you have an elevated platform that can do work, all sorts of different things can be done. So think of some point in the future. Right now, actually, where we're in the market is we do this esoteric world called non-destructive testing, where we physically fly up, make contact with the structure during flight, take a reading with an electronic gauge. And we're typically in the oil and gas industry or infrastructure. So we're reading the thickness of the steel or the thickness of the coating, the paint on those things. But once you have that precision flight control ability, you can then start spray painting. You can then start pressure washer or surface prep so that you're able to prepare a surface to be able to paint it. So there's all these different add-ons that come once the platform has been developed. And if you're, you know, sticking a device onto a structure to take a measurement, you could also stick a sensor that you leave on the structure when you fly away that could, you know, be used for something. So there's, you know, a lot of capabilities for this particular product in the market. And what's really, really super exciting is just like we've seen an explosion in the cloud with, you know, technology with AI and ML, machine learning, artificial intelligence, we've seen the same thing happen in the coatings industry. So paint has become much more complex and a lot of technology has been engineered into the paints these days. So there are coatings, I'm sure you've probably heard of in a COVID world, there are antimicrobial coatings. You put it on a wall of a hospital, if you've got COVID on it, you touch it to the wall, you know, the coating actually kills the bacteria or the organism that's on there. Same thing, they have coatings that pull nitrous oxide out of the air. So sacrificial coatings that are photocatalytic, meaning that when the sun hits them, they have titanium embedded in them. It reacts with the nitrous oxide, which is the main source of smog. 60% of smog comes from nitrous oxide. So one of the things we're doing at Apellix is we have a project Breathe, where we're attempting to talk to local governments and federal governments about applying this photocatalytic property or photocatalytic coating on properties, on surfaces to be able to clean the air. And one great example of that is the sound barriers on the interstate. There are miles and miles of that. And that's right where the source of that pollution comes from, the smog. So you'd be able to put this coating on there, which, by the way, was developed by NASA. So we would be licensing a NASA technology, using our drone system, our aerial robotic system to apply it, and you know, making the air easier to breathe.
So when we first met, being part of the Drone Council of CompTIA Advisory Council, I was thinking more of drones, but I realized that in your title and the company's descriptor, it talks about aerial robotic systems. That's actually a very deliberate term that perhaps better describes what you do. I mean, these are robots that just happen to be using a drone right now to do things that are probably more efficient and in some cases get at things that humans can't get at very easily or at all.
It is, and that's kind of our magic, is we have added a robotic arm to the drone. So with that arm, there's what's called the end effector, and that's where you can think of that as your hand at the end of your arm, and that's where the spray gun is, or that's where the conducer is that touches the surface to take the measurements, or that's where the tool is that's doing some sort of a job when it's in contact with the surface. So we have actually married drones and robots. And one of the really interesting things, really quickly, on the technology side is drones were never made, aircraft and period were never made to fly close to structures or come in contact with structures. So the technology to actually do this is extremely difficult. So So three things a drone needs to fly is it needs to know where it is location-wise. It gets that from GPS satellites. But if you're behind a ship or a water tower, for example, that data is bad. The second thing it needs is, well, which direction? It goes by magnetic compass. Well, big piece of metal says, hey, I'm north. You know, so that's bad. And then the third thing, just like airplanes, it needs height, and it does that from barometric pressure. Well, when you're next to a structure, the readings from barometric pressure are all bad. So we actually disable all the things that a drone uses to fly and replace that data with sensor data that's coming from the aircraft itself and fly by computer control from the sensor. Because one thing we've learned very early on is this is not something that you can do manually. And that was a huge surprise, because when I was out there with some of our early drones spray painting with those things, after 5 minutes, you would get cognitively fatigued. You would be happy to set the thing down just to take a break, because it's so demanding to be able to do it. And of course, it's a very sloppy job when a human's doing it, because you're reacting, you know, moving the joystick a couple times a second or whatever it might be, versus a computer that's doing it many, 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 many times faster.
That raises an interesting question, because you're talking about the differences of piloting these robots, these aerial robots. So do you have to provide additional training for drone pilots who might be used to the open skies and the sky's the limit? Because what you're talking about is something more limiting and much more critical in terms of the relationship between these objects and what they're trying to coat.
In some respects, it depends on what they're doing and how they're currently flying. So to be a commercial drone pilot now in the United States, you have to have a FAA 107 license, which is a test you take. And you know, it assures that you know how to operate drones properly, safely, and legally. People that have flown that have a 107 license find flying our drones to be much easier. And that's because they're just doing the part of flying the drone from the ground to the asset that needs to be inspected or to where the work needs to be done. At that point, they push a button. Once they push a button, the drone, you know, takes over, the onboard computer takes over flight and does the work from there. They're there to watch and take over if something happens and they need to, or they're there to move the drone or migrate it from point A to point B.
That's not the answer I expected. I was going to expect, wow, it's going to require extra training and sensitivity, but the computers make up for that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, a lot of the inspection drone companies that are using visual cameras for visual inspection, it does, because then, you know, when you're flying close to structures, you have to be a very skilled pilot. But our job as a company, we feel, is to, you know, have the robot do the heavy lifting so that the human can do the intelligent part, you know. The human is the one that needs to know, okay, well, where do I need to take the readings or apply the coding, and how do I need to apply it? And do I need to do this? And then from the data that's gathered, what data do I need to gather? And then how do I, you know, crunch the data once it has been gathered? What do I do with it?
So Bob, now that you have the interest of the entire audience, can you give us some examples of how this might be applied in the local government setting, even the state government setting? I mean, you've obviously given this some thought. I mean, you've actually moved into these markets, but I think this would be of great interest to our audience.
Well, drones are fantastic, magical flying machines, and they can do a lot. And currently the drones on the market that have the cameras on them are doing a ton of good works, in public works, specifically helping firefighters locate the source of a fire. You know, things like that, helping after car accidents, helping local law enforcement reconstruct maybe, you know, kind of how the accident occurred and trying to make things safer. So there's a lot of great use for those types of drones that do the visual types of jobs and work. In addition to that, when you start opening up the affordances that a system that can physically interact with a drone that can physically interact with its environment, now you have other things that can be done. So one thing that we've heard time and again from organizations, local governments, that's a pain point is graffiti. You know, if it's on an overpass, for example, do you have to shut the road down? You have to bring in a cherry picker or a JLG or whatever is necessary. You also have the issue of putting a person at risk anytime somebody's at height. The number one cause of death in the United States, occupational death, is outside of car accidents, is falls. So it's a huge issue from the safety perspective. And then, you know, this is 2021. If you could put a robot up there doing something instead of a person at risk, why not? So, you know, graffiti is an area. Like I said, if you apply Breathe, that product, that NASA derived product, that's another area. Also, some of these coatings, like I alluded to earlier, they're becoming more scientifically advanced. They have coatings that when you then try to paint over them with graffiti, the paint just runs off of those. So some of the super hydrophobic nanotechnology coatings are graffiti prevention type things. So you can also do that with certain coatings that will keep a structure cleaner longer. So things that a local government might need to take care of, some of their assets, be it, you know, elevated water towers for the municipal water supply, or be it overpasses for the roads. These systems can actually go in there. Bridges is another great example. Just today, a report came out rating infrastructure in the United States as a C-. And there's a huge backlog of infrastructure projects that need to be taken care of. This is something that we feel could be helpful in those areas.
Yeah. So what would be a better use of your technology? Would it be more for the coating of these structures? Because there are just, you know, hundreds of thousands of water towers across the country, probably millions of overpasses and bridges. So the question is it better for coating like painting, or is it better use for inspection to check the integrity of metals?
It's actually a combination of three different things because the if you're talking about metal, you're talking about corrosion, but there are also lots of other structures that are concrete, different materials. But we have a prototype of a drone that does what's called soft wash. So that's designed for cleaning mold and mildew off the side of elevated water towers. So there it's you know, you've got a pump at the ground and it's pushing, you know, 1,000 PSI and 6 gallons per minute. So it's a large volume of water. It's not the same as pressure blasting, but it's a large volume of water. And you put sodium hydrochloride in there and it kills the mold and washes it down off the water towers. So that's something we have in development, but the ability to clean a structure is important. The ability to then, once it's clean, coat that structure, be it with a clear coat that, you know, repels water, or a clear coat that can pull pollution out of the air, or just your normal coatings that protective assets use, that's valuable. And then on top of that, adding the third component, which is the measurement, the ability to physically make contact with the structure to take measurement. And most all these large assets, like an elevated water tower, are covered with different standards. For example, American Petroleum Institute, API 653, for a lot of the ground-based above-ground storage tanks, they require thickness measurements of the steel of the tank every 5 years. And that's just a way of, you know, ensuring that it's a reliable asset and it's not, and it can still be kept in service and used. So gathering that data by measurement, you know, keeping the surface clean, coating it when it's needed to extend the life of the asset, all of those things can save, you know, millions of dollars. It's not uncommon for a water tower to be painted for that job to cost, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not in the millions of dollars. And that's difficult on local budgets because you're going along maintaining. Once every 20 years, all of a sudden you've got this huge bill, this huge liability. One of the things that you can do if you maintain that surface and keep it clean over time is you can stretch that out. So instead of getting a 20-year lifespan out of that coating, you might get a 25-year lifespan. And then having the ability to measure that and verify the thickness of the steel and that the surface, you know, the asset's going to remain viable is very important.
So that leads to a really important question. And I know you're going to have a great answer for one of the great limitations of drone technology is battery life. So to what extent, you're talking about painting some large structures that require some staying power. So how do you address that?
Yeah, these are tethered. So the power's on the ground. Just like the paint's on the ground and the compressor's on the ground. So the power goes up. So theoretically, the drones could fly all day. Now, we do find situations where we do run on battery power for smaller jobs or limited jobs. But especially The drones we have manufactured, we would have loved to go purchase a drone and put our stuff on there and have it work, but we couldn't find anything that met our needs. With all the sensors we put on there with the onboard computer, it's pretty large. So our drones are actually 1 meter by 1 meter, so 3 feet by 3 feet. We have what's called an X4 configuration, our Opus X4, and that lifts basically 60 pounds.
Wow.
And then our Opus X8, which is also an X4 configuration, but with 8 motors instead of 4, that lifts, you know, close to 115 pounds. So whenever you're pulling an umbilical cord or something up, there's a lot of weight involved, and you have to have a very robust system. And to do that requires a lot of power. So if we were to spray paint, for example, with the drone, with just battery power, we would have to land after 5 or 6 minutes. It wouldn't last 20 minutes or 40 minutes like some of the camera drones do. But with the tether on there and the power coming from the ground, theoretically you can stay up all day.
So you're telling us that you're making your own drones, or you're modifying existing drones?
We build our own drones from scratch, and we design and engineer the power supply as well, because a lot of the drones you'll see flying out there are 1500 or 2000 watt drones. Some of the larger ones might be maximum of 3,000 or 3,500. Our system is 5,000 and and 7,000. So this is, DoD grade materials that we've put together for this. And again, we would have loved to purchase it if that had been available, but you can't find a power supply for a drone that powerful on the market.
So you have become an aerial robotics manufacturer, let alone user of the product you've designed, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So do you have a vision of what the next generation of your technology, where will that take us?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So again, kind of Appellix as a company is playing in the world of corrosion. So we want to, when an asset is new and built, we want to be able to coat it and clean it over time, measure it over time. When it needs to be blasted and cleaned and repainted, do that. So the cradle to grave, we're taking care of that asset, and we're doing it with an automated robotic system. And over the years, our envision, and we've seen it come true to date so far, is we keep adding additional automation to it. So it's more and more automated, less and less involvement from humans to do that job. And what that does is that frees up the person that would normally be doing that job to do higher value use. So one example is with the measurement drone, right? We're up there taking measurements of the thickness of steel. You really don't care if it's a squirrel or a pigeon getting you that information. What's important is the data. And as people right. from CompTIA know, it's all about the data. It's that information that allows you to make those decisions. And if you have to spend, days and hours and weeks gathering information, wouldn't you rather have that information handed to you so you could spend days and hours and weeks analyzing that information, predicting things, taking that information and finding out how to better extend the life of that asset or better utilize that asset or how to coat it better so that it lasts longer, and do it all from your desk where you're safe, not up on a bucket lift or on a crane or rappelling down on a rope.
So looking back, what has been your most exciting or challenging application to date?
Oh, it's all been very exciting and very challenging too, which go hand in hand.
Yeah.
The precision flight control, obviously. And so far we have not seen anyone else in the world that's been able to crack that nut. And again, it's a very complicated system because drones weren't made to fly close to structures. They weren't made to go very, very slow. They were made to go fast and far and take photos. So to make them go slow and close to a structure is very difficult, requires a lot of computing horsepower, a lot of sensors. No one sensor gives you all the information you need. You have to have a multimodal array of different sensors on there, bringing the data in. You have to do data algorithms, data smoothing, data, in addition to gathering the data, then you've got to feed that to the onboard computer and process it and then send it to the flight controller. And this all happens, at sub-second, multiple times per second. So you have to, one example we give is if you're a drone and you're taking a photograph or a video and you're 2 or 3 or 6 inches off your flight path that's not a big deal. Well, if you're next to a structure and your sixth sense is off your flight path, that could be a catastrophic accident. So, you know, we have to have millimeter level precision and accuracy with the control of these drones. And again, that's why the computer is so important, because the computer can do that better than a person, just because by the time we see something and can twitch our thumb, in that amount of time, the drone could have made hundreds of micro adjustments to the flight.
So you're headquartered in Florida. Do you have a national footprint then? If somebody in Tacoma, Washington wants your services, that could be arranged?
We do. So we have a joint development agreement with the largest paint manufacturer in the world, which is AkzoNobel. Most people here in the United States have never heard of them, but they are a Fortune 200 company. They used to own Glidden Paint before they sold it. But we're developing the spray painting drone with them. And this summer in Europe, we will be doing a roadshow with the spray painting drone. In the States, what we're doing is the contact-based measurement drones, and a lot of work there because oil and gas is one of the primaries. Maritime is the other, with shipping, and infrastructure is the third. A lot of that is in the Houston area. So we do have assets available for deployment in Houston. And then we also, these things can fit on an airplane, so we can go anywhere. And because we are critical infrastructure, you know, we have been operating through COVID somewhat normally, but of course with all the safety precautions in place.
And you and I were talking before we began recording this about the deficit this country finds itself in terms of infrastructure repair. I mean, there's a crisis here. So you're sitting in a really good position if more federal funds are released to address this issue, which has been talked about for the last 6 years.
Yeah, and we hope so. We feel that with the new administration putting money into infrastructure and the new administration putting money into green technology and jobs, we're hoping that one of our projects like Project Breathe, that can actually go on infrastructure and can clean the air at the same time, is something that will find a ready market acceptance.
I have found this conversation unbelievably exciting. You've opened up my mind to things I hadn't really contemplated. So you've been listening to a conversation with Bob Dahlstrom, who's CEO of AppleX. Also Aerial Robotic Systems, which is a better explanation of what they do. Bob, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and what you're doing. And I wish you nothing but success. It's very, very exciting.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you, Alan.
This has been a production of PTI, the Public Technology Institute. To learn more, visit pti.org.